The following is a product of the Uprising High School Ministry at The Grove.
All right, so we're finishing this series in James called Just Do It. All right, this is it. This is the last week. Do I look more sophisticated if I hold coffee? What if I talk in a British accent? All right, so today we're going to be going through Just Do It. It's a series in James. And we're going to talk about the Lord and his influence in your life. I think my accent's changing a little bit as I speak. It's turning into more of a Australian, like, I never knew I could do an Australian accent. It's righteous. All right, I'm going to put this down. That worked fast. Okay, we're finishing this series, Just Do It, the series in James. We're going to be ending with chapter 5 here. And we're going to be talking about control a little bit. And I came up with this. I have 3 points tonight. And we're going to be talking about relinquishing, relaxing, and responding. And those will all make sense here in a minute. So when we think about control, we all like to have control. We all want to be in control. We don't like things out of control because it's scary and, you know, panicky, and you can get stabbed. You never know what could happen. The problem is we're not really in control. And I'm going to use this analogy tonight of driving and how life is like driving. When we're driving, we might think we're in control, so much so that we might sometimes do stupid stuff. There's a study that says if you're under the age of like 24 or something like that and you have people in your car, you're way more likely to get an accident. Whereas if you're over that age, you're less likely to get an accident if you have people in your car. Probably because that person in your car when you're over 24 is like an infant and, you know, you actually care about that person. Whereas if it's your friend, you're like, hey, let's die together. So I was driving in my senior year into the school parking lot, and this really awesome song came on. It was me and my buddy, and we were just feeling it, man. It was a sick beat, and we were going ham. And we're like huge guys, and there's this little single cab, little pickup Nissan Frontier, hard body. It's pretty sick. Had alloy wheels, like 14 inches. It was huge, and I could go off-roading and get stuck. So I had this awesome truck. We come rolling into the parking lot, and it kind of has this long entrance with gates on either side and a way coming out. And as you know, like when we were just driving down the road, it was just kind of like, yeah, we're in it. But because we're coming in and people are going to see us, the windows must go down and the music must go up. And I had this sick little system that I wired myself, and it was like literally basically one of these speakers I put in my car, not meant for a car, and turned that up, and it sounded like crap, but it was okay because it was loud. And we pull in and we're dancing like crazy, and the security guard, like, we make eye contact and he starts going like this, and we're like, yeah, he's feeling it too. And so we're like feeding off the security guard and we're just like rocking out, and I just like start turning, and then it's just like, ah! I did throw my Bible, I apologize. It's okay. God's word is strong. That was me hitting a car, by the way, in case you weren't sure. So I smashed into the back of this girl's Corolla, Toyota Corolla. It was very fancy. Her dad bought it, which, like most people at my school that I went to, because I went to school in Anaheim Hills. I had a ghetto vehicle because I lived in the ghetto of Anaheim Hills, which is not really the ghetto at all. And so I hit this girl's car, and it sucked. And I thought I was in control, but I really wasn't. And I think too often we kind of drive around or live our life like we're in control, but we're not at all. James 4:13-7. I know we said we're going to finish 5, but this piece kind of ties in with it. I'll read verse 14. So why do you eat, 13. Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we're going to go to this city or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make some money. Why? You don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Something strange about mist or fog or whatever is it comes in, you know it's not going to be there long. You don't know how long it will stay. A couple weeks ago, we had fog that just like sat here for like a whole freaking day, and it was like, what state do we live in again? California is used to it because you're close to the beach. Fog comes in every single day. To experience that here and have it sit here until like 12 o'clock was crazy. But James is comparing our life to that. Our life is like this fog, this mist. We're here, but we don't know how long we're going to be here. We're alive, but we don't know how long we're going to be alive. Like, you think you're in control of your life, but not a single person knows what day will be their last. I know it's kind of like morbid, like, hey, you're going to die and you don't know when. Okay, bye. No. What he's saying is, like, you kind of live and you act like you're in control of your life, but you're not. And you don't even know how long you're going to live. Like, who are you to assume you're going to be able to do all this stuff and live this way forever? In the same truck, my senior year, me and my best friend Dustin, who a bunch of you guys know, we were driving around in my truck, and it was at night, and we just got some Burger King from where I worked, and we're pulling out, and we're getting ready to go across the street, but my alternator went out. Here's what happens when your alternator goes out. Your vehicle basically runs off that electricity that's being generated by your alternator. So when you don't have your alternator, it starts to go out. It has to pull from your battery. Well, batteries are basically have enough juice in them to start your car and operate some stuff. That's basically it. That's the sole purpose of a battery. It's not meant to run a vehicle. But it was night, so my headlights were on. I felt my alternator start to go. I turned my lights off, and it was like I hit the NOS. Like, I went from being able to go 5 miles an hour to like 15 miles an hour. Maybe that's not NOS, but it felt like it because it picked up like crazy. As soon as I pulled off my headlights or turned them off, my car had more juice to put into the engine as opposed to my lights. And I'm like, oh my gosh, something's wrong. Dustin, he's like mechanically engineered. No, inclined. I was thinking mechanics, engineering. He's mechanically inclined. I'm like, dude, what's going on? He goes, man, dude, it seems like it's probably your alternator or battery. He goes, but I'd guess your alternator because you turn your lights off, you don't have as much power. You turn your lights on, and you turn your lights on, you know what I'm trying to say. The Holy Spirit will translate my English for you. And so I turn my lights off, and we're kind of stuck in this intersection. I'm trying to go, and it's a stick shift. Now, one thing that's fun, if you drive a stick and you have friends in your vehicle that's a manual, they don't know when you're going to shift. And so, like, as you shift, like, you just kind of, like, get to watch them rock back and forth uncontrollably and shift. Which, when you're picking up a girl on a date, like, you, like, feel bad. You're, like, try not to shift. Just like with Jill, I always felt bad when she had like, this nice car on rims because her family's rich. And I'm like, hey, let's go for a ride. My windows are tinted because you paid for that for my birthday. That's a true story. And so Dustin's sitting next to me. I have the stick, and I'm trying to like keep my gear up, trying to keep it in low gear so I have power. I feel like I'm about to stall out. I hit the hazard lights, not thinking that if my headlights cause me to go slower, my hazards, when they come on, it's going to cause me to go slower, which they did. So I turn my hazards on, and the speed of my vehicle drops real fast. But hazards don't stay on for like more than what, 1.5 seconds? And so they turn off. So 1.5 seconds slow, 1.5 seconds fast, slow, fast. And so we're like rocking back and forth like this. And I'm like, dude, fix my truck, man. How do we stop this? He's like, turn your hazards off. I'm like, I can't reach them. I can't reach my hazards. Whoa. Hold on. I'm not kidding you. That's what it looked like. And when that happens, you can't help but laugh. So on top of this, we're like, ha, 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 ha. We're going to die. Oh. Can someone buy me a manicure? Not a manicure. What's that called? A masseuse? Massage person? I've never spoken English before today. my alternator goes out, and it's just one of those moments, again, where you realize life's like driving. You think you're in control, and you think like, oh, I know what to do in this situation. This is what you're supposed to do. And it makes you even less in control than you were before. At the end of this little section, verse 17, it says, listen, you guys all boast about tomorrow and how you think you're going to live. And then it says, if anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it's a sin for them. In other words, there's like doing bad, which we know, like, okay, bad things are wrong because that's why we call them bad things. They're sinful. You go to hell. Fire. Hot. Right? And we know that. But what's interesting, what I think we don't realize enough, is that sometimes we know there's something good we're supposed to do. Sometimes we know that there's this good thing that we're supposed to do in a moment, and we don't do them. And yet here it says, if you know you're supposed to do good and you don't, that's a sin too. That is essentially also bad. And I think what we realize is, and what we kind of see, if you think about it, when you try to live your life like you're in control, you miss out completely on everything that's happening around you. You miss out on the opportunities to do good, because when you're just focused on what's happening in your life and trying to control your life is pretty messed up. I don't know if you know this. I follow some of you guys on Twitter, and I'm just like, how do they survive? I don't understand. Your life's pretty messed up. And when you're trying to just control everything in your life, you miss out completely on all the opportunities around you to do good in the lives of others. 5:1-6 talks about, he says, your wealth has rotted and your moths eat your clothes. Your gold and silver eroded. So it uses these images of rotting and your stuff being eaten and corroded and just dissolving and going away. Verse 5 says, you've lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence, and you've fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You've condemned and murdered the innocent one who was not opposing you. This person right here, you have the person we just talked about, who's kind of the person who thinks they're in control of the vehicle, but you're not. This person right here is a person who's in the front seat, just side seat driving like crazy, who can't shut up about which way they think they're supposed to go, what's the fastest way to get there, how fast they should be going, if they're going too slow, if they're going too fast, if they're not using their blinker, if their seatbelt's not on, if they need to go through the drive-through because you're hungry, whatever, right? That person has everything in the world to say and critique your driving. Like, they somehow become the world's greatest driver when they're sitting next to you, and you somehow become the world's suckiest driver. But I think reality is we become this person when we're like the wealthy, when we just kind of live our rich lives. We become consumed with our influence, right? Like, this is talking about wealthy. For you guys, wealth isn't measured in money. You might think, like, no, I would really like some money. That'd be good. The lottery's at like $500 gajillion right now. Let's go win that together. You might be thinking, let's get some money. But the reality is, the way you guys live your life, and really a lot of people, and it's hard not to, is we measure our wealth in high school and sometimes even beyond high school in our image, in our popularity. And so wealth in high school is really just popularity. The most popular person is really the most wealthiest, because wealth is simply the power to influence. And in high school, that's popularity. If you're who everybody wants to be, or be like, or be with, then you have more influence than anyone else. And so you essentially, you'd be in that group of wealthy people. And it's talking about, listen, like, you live your life on earth in luxury and you self-indulge, you fatten yourself. So in other words, you take what you have, your wealth, and use it just for yourself. You use your influence, what you've been given, only for yourself. This power that you've been given, this ability to change the lives of others and change people around you and influence people, you only use for yourself. And you don't try to help someone else. And then you have the person who's just in the back seat, right? Like in that nice Cadillac that has like seat massagers and air conditioning in the seats and warmers and like butt squishy things and all this fancy stuff, and like you have like an ice chest built in under the seat. You press a button, it's like, you know, TV, all this stuff, and you're just like, you know, you're just too cool for school. Your windows are up. You don't want the world to see into your life. You don't want to see into the world. You don't care what's going on. You just want to be comfortable and tell the driver to take you wherever you want, because it's all about you. And we get kind of caught up in that success of it a little bit. We get kind of caught up in the awesomeness of the success in our life. And it keeps us from seeing the world around us. We miss these opportunities to take care of others. And on top of that, we sort of condemn them. We have more than enough room in our lives and more than enough influence to do good, and we don't invite anybody into that. We shut them out, tint the windows, lock the doors, bulletproof, in case you drive through Compton. And I think we live our life this way, self-focused, to impress people, really. And also because we don't want people to know what's really going on in our lives. We don't want people to see the struggles we have. We don't want people to know that we're messed up, that we think we're flawed, or we know what our flaws are. We don't want people to see that, because the second we become flawed, we feel like we're useless to everyone around us. There goes our influence, right? There goes our wealth. And we don't want to lose our wealth, because our wealth is what helps us to feel in control. And so the first R is relinquish. We need to relinquish the control you think you have. Because again, remember, you're a mist. Tonight could be your last. You're but a vapor. Relinquish control. The next thing is what we really need to do is, if we're going to relinquish control, that means we're going to be living like God is the one who's driving. And so what the heck does that mean? Chapter 5, 7 through 12 uses some of these key words. Verse 7, it says to be patient. Verse 8, it says to stand firm. Verse 9, it says don't grumble about each other. Verse 12, don't swear by heaven or by earth. Just let your yes be yes. If you're saying yes, just give a simple yes. Or if you're going to say no, give a simple no. You don't need to swear on things. Let your yeses be yes and your noes be noes. And so, in other words, to live like God, if we're going to be patient, right? If we're going to stand firm and not grumble or not complain, essentially what we have to do is we have to relax. Sounds easier said than done, for sure. And it is. Relaxing is hard. Not being in control is not easy. It's not our natural thing. We want to be in control. That's all we want. I wish I could control everything I said, but sometimes I say things, I'm like, what the heck did I just say? Whatever, you guys have to figure it out. Translate it later. You know? We want to be in control of our lives. And when we give that up, when we finally go, okay, God, take control, we then have to relax. We have to be patient in that. And be patient with people. Be patient with each other. Stand firm when life is difficult and hard and not fair. And not complain. Complaining kills. And so, in other words, it's you're sitting in the car, but you're not worrying about the road conditions. You're not worrying about your destination. You're not even worried about the sketchy people around you. Not in a negative way. In reality, it looks more like your window's down, the doors are unlocked, and you don't care if people see the junk in your trunk. You got junk, you know, junk in your trunk, right? The messed up stuff in your life, the things you feel like. You don't care if people know who you really are. When we relax, we're letting people in. I would suggest even that we don't just like ride the windows down, but you ride on top of the car. I mean, it's more fun anyways, right? And just trust God to keep you safe. That's a better story when you ride on top of the car. The last thing is in this last section of chapter 5, verse 13 through 20, is living life with a faith response. I'm going to read this section, and I want you to kind of hear the situations and hear the responses in these situations. Is anyone among you in trouble? Let them pray. Is anyone happy? Let them sing songs of praise. Is anyone among you sick? Let them call the elders of the church to pray over them and anoint them with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer offered in faith will make the sick person well. The Lord will raise them up. If they've sinned, they'll be forgiven. Therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for each other so that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. The very last verse is 19 and 20. My brothers and sisters, if one of you should wander from the truth and someone should bring that person back, remember this. Whoever turns a sinner from the error of their ways will save them from death and cover over a multitude of sins. We need to live life with a faith response, a response of faith, this reflex, this Jesus reflex, if you want to call it, to anything that happens in your life. If your life is trouble, pray. If everything's awesome in your life, you got good news, sing praise. If you're sick, have people pray for you. If you sin, confess your sin. Not because you sinned, but because God offers forgiveness. Confession isn't an initiation. Forgiveness is already offered. Confession is a response to that forgiveness that has been offered. So often, the way we forgive each other is someone has to come to us and tell us how sorry they are, how bad they feel, and they have to show it. Just the words aren't enough. And then maybe we'll forgive them. With God, it's not like that. With God, he says, you're forgiven. Just tell me why you need the forgiveness. Confess it. He knows why. But he knows we need to tell each other so that we can support and encourage each other and so that we can accept that forgiveness that's already offered. So we have all these things that we should be living our life in response. So when we're able to finally let go of control, right? Give our life to God. He can drive. And then when we start to learn how to relax and not freak out about how scary it is to do this Christian thing, and then we begin to learn how to live life with a faith response to everything that happens in life, it changes you and it changes the world around you. For God. I'm going to ask the worship team to come back up. I want to finish with a song here before we go to breakout groups. When you think about letting go of control, sort of not giving up, but giving in. When you realize that, I can't control my life. I'm messed up. On top of that, God's the one who's ultimately in control. But when we relinquish that control to him, he's the God, the creator of the universe. The stars that are billions of light years away to the smallest molecule that makes you up and everything around us. He creates that. He's in control of that. Why wouldn't we want to let him control that? That's like choosing to... If we give ourselves control, that's like choosing to let a 2-year-old drive the car over an experienced professional like race car driver. Sorry, I want the professional to drive me around. I need to let go. We need to let go. And this last thing, confession. There's no greater, I think, response that we as believers are called to make than to respond to God's forgiveness. And it starts with confessing the junk in our life. And so, why don't you guys just take a minute and just come before God. What do you need to confess? What's hard in your life? What do you need to relinquish? Where do you need to relax? And what sins do you need to just let go of? And be forgiven for. So take a moment, close your eyes, bow your head, just you and God, no one else is here. We're just all before God right now. And as you feel led to join and worship this last song, do so.